go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I'm Ben Bullen. I write some videos here at the website, and I hang out with Scott on this show. Scott, what's going on today?
Well, there's a lot going on today. Big happening.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about possibility of driving to the North Pole.
Yeah, that's a good question. We love road trips, and so do a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, that's an outlandish one that we're talking about, though. I mean, it's kind of far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it.
It would take a lot of preparation.
It would take an awful lot of preparation.
And one of the big parts of that preparation would be the vehicle that you use. Because I'm going to go out on a limb here. You know, you're the expert. I'm going to just make an assumption, and someone will bust me if I'm wrong. I'm going to assume that our awesome Honda Civic and Monte Carlo could probably not get us into the upper reaches of the Arctic
they
regions.
They are awesome, and I would say we'd probably be able to just make it into Canada, and that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we could go.
No, depends on the
right, the time of year.
You know, it even depends on the time of year. We might not even make it that far.
But so that's the most important thing, because it's so easy for us to forget. You know, the bulk of humanity lives in a very temperate region, or a region where it's not always covered with permafrost and tundra and stuff.
And imagine that.
Yeah, but those areas are populated, and those people are just like you and I, have to get places to get things and live their lives.
Correct.
And they can't do it with normal vehicles in a lot of cases.
No, they need specialty, you know what, I'm going to say specialty off-road vehicles, because we recently talked about off-road vehicles, and we said that we were going to take it kind of maybe a few different directions. Mm-hmm. This is kind of an unexpected direction that we just happened across. And in fact, it was suggested by one of our coworkers.
Yes, this is a suggestion from our colleague Rachel Frank, who you may know as one of the awesome host of Coolest Stuff on the Planet, our travel podcast.
Yeah, and she had a fantastic idea that we talk about these vehicles. She showed them to me, and I'd seen a couple of these things, but she showed me a few that I had never seen before in my life, and they're really interesting. Polar vehicles.
Yes.
Polar vehicles. So these are designed to go into just completely, Arctic.
Inaccessible.
Inaccessible, inhospitable terrain.
Yes.
The worst of the worst, crevasses and glaciers, and just you couldn't take a normal vehicle there. You couldn't take a 4x4 truck there.
Nope.
A typical 4x4 truck. There are variations on that we'll see today as we talk about as we go through. But
pardon my French, but no matter how badass a 4x4 is in the off-roading that we normally talk about or that we talked about in our last episode, it probably could not get into the North or South Pole without some extensive modification.
Exactly. And some of them are modified that we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. Others are purpose-built snow machines.
Yes.
They're built to, imagine a vehicle that can, go across a 15-foot crevasse and make it, in and out of the crevasse and be able to float and drive across areas where there is no ice, there's water. Climb hills, just basically exist out in that type of environment. And it's really, really rugged. It's the most extreme cold temperature that you can think of.
Do you have an example for me?
I've got a lot of examples for you. As a matter of fact, we've got a big long list here. And you know what? I think we should go through these pretty quickly because I found this list on provehicles.co.uk. And the writer listed 13 of his favorite vehicles. 13 of his favorite polar vehicles from the Antarctic. And we can just kind of go through these quickly, but it'll give people an idea of what to look for. And you could even find this list if you wanted to and look it up. It's called Top 13 Polar Super Vehicles from Antarctic.
So despite the title of this episode, we should just let our listeners know we're talking about either pole.
Oh, that's right.
We thought the North Pole sounded better.
Yeah. I'm talking about the Antarctic now. We're talking about the South Pole.
Well, you could take these either way. You could take to either pole.
Yeah, exactly. These are fine in either environment.
Yeah.
Let's just start with 13, and we'll work our way down real quick. Looks like a van, a big Ford van.
Yeah.
Comes with a 7.3-liter V8 engine and a total length of 6.5 meters, and weighs 5 tons. But the interesting thing about this is 6 wheels.
Yeah, that's very odd. If you look at it, it does obviously have larger wheels that we'll see a lot of times in polar vehicles. They're wider and they're taller, but it has, at the rear axle, it has almost like a double axle in the rear.
Yeah, exactly. So it's three on each side if you were to look at it from the side profile. Huge tires, like, you know, off-road type tires. Again, this is like an expedition vehicle that's for the Moon Reagan expedition.
That's made by Ford.
Yeah, Ford. Yeah, it's a modified, it actually says a modified truck. It looks like a big van, but it says modified truck. Next one is a piston bully. And,
I like that name.
I do too, piston bully. This is kind of cool. This is one where you see it working on a lot of ski slopes, pushing a snow plow, usually grooming the slopes.
It's a tugboat, basically, for the snow.
Yeah, the next one is the double Hägglund. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Hägglund.
Swedish all-terrain vehicle. Has two sections kind of hinged in the middle. Interesting vehicle. There's a bunch of these, so we'll just go through them real quick.
And
we'll get, there's some more interesting examples, I think, later on that we'll talk about that have a better story to them.
Yes.
Or at least a more detailed story.
This is just the rundown.
There's also the Delta truck, which is just a great big truck that can transport up to 20 passengers around the Antarctic. Says no belts, it means it works on, has wheels. When it says no belts, it means it has wheels, not treads.
Tank treads. Basically.
A lot of these vehicles have treads, just for obvious reasons.
Like the Sprite, which has, it also transports passengers, but if you see the Sprite and the Delta truck together, the truck has two axles and wide tires, whereas the Sprite has, you know, pretty much tank treads.
Yeah, tank treads from end to end, it looks like. And they're kind of curved up at one end.
That's one of our crevasse crawlers.
Exactly. Yeah, the next one is a Terrabus. And I like the Terrabus. I think that one looks pretty cool.
It does look really cool.
Terrabus is, they say it's one of the rarest ones in the world, but I've got a conflicting report on that later that in some other piece of information I've got here, it says that there are more like 20 or 30 of these around in the world.
Okay.
Not that it's, I mean, that's still pretty rare.
That is pretty rare. And just so you guys know, it's T-E-R-R-A. We don't have accents transforming it into Terror Bus.
No.
Which would be a cooler name, but.
Terror Bus for obvious reasons.
Right.
Terrain.
Earth Bus.
Yeah, Earth Bus. That's right. Then there's the Tucker Snowcat. The Tucker name associated with this one, but not the Tucker that we're probably thinking of. This one looks like a semi-cab with a small pickup bed. This one has four individual tank treads at the corners, and I think that's pretty cool looking. But obviously it performs a little better in the snow than something with wheels would, I guess.
And it looks like a modification, but it's made that way.
Yep.
That's one of our specialty purpose-built vehicles.
Let me go through these pretty quick.
Yeah.
Foremost Nodwell, which is a fire truck in this example, but it looks similar with the tank tread. There's the Chief Train, also from Foremost. Used on airfields, probably fueling, that type of thing. Cargo loading. Next one is a Matrack truck, which is kind of cool. Looks just like any pickup you'd see on the road.
Absolutely.
Only it's got four small tank treads at each corner, and it looks really interesting.
Yeah.
Wonder how that handles.
It looks like somebody made that.
I bet that would be a lot of fun. Well, somebody did, but a lot of them probably. Then there's the Mars One Humvee, which is a Humvee that's converted with the same type of track situation we talked about. The Snow Cruiser, which we're going to get to later in a little more detail.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, we'll go back to that.
The Snow Cruiser is pretty awesome. We'll talk about it in a moment. But the picture in this one's got a small plane on top of it, a biplane. And then the last one is the one probably it's your favorite you said on this list.
Yes, the Concept Ice Vehicle, or the CIV. Mm-hmm. This thing looks like it's out of a science fiction film.
Yeah, it's a James Bond type
thing. It's a James Bond. I was going to say that. Yeah, that's awesome. We're on the same page.
It's definitely spy gear type stuff. Well, I whistled on that one. That says it's definitely spy gear type stuff. And
85 miles an hour.
85 miles an hour. That's what's amazing, because a lot of these that we're talking about, they're limited to around ballpark 30 miles per hour. So snow, you know, vehicles that can travel in this type of terrain are limited to a certain speed, or just, I don't know if that's safety or if it's just because they're more torque than anything. They're heavy. They're extremely heavy.
Yeah, because they're meant to gain traction.
They're big, big vehicles.
And this thing is rear propelled, and it's on actual, you know, they resemble skis.
Yeah.
So
three skis.
Yeah.
And what's it propelled by? Because we didn't.
Oh yeah, biofuel.
No. The propeller.
Oh,
you're missing the big part.
I'm missing the big part.
Yeah,
there's
a huge airplane prop at the back of this thing that propels it forward. It's driven by air.
And you probably only one person can ride in it. I guess if you're really cool with somebody, if you guys are close, it's your girlfriend or boyfriend or something, you can squeeze in the cockpit, but that's probably not safe.
I guess so. I probably wouldn't push it. Anyways, let's move on to some of the reasons. Why would you do this anyways? But the first is there's commercial needs.
Absolutely.
There's the need to transport people. There's the need to transport goods over long distances that, you know, like we said, you know, impassable, really.
Yeah.
But they've created these vehicles to do just that. The other is military needs. And, again, same reason. You know, they need to transport people. They need to get materials. There's kind of a Cold War leftover early warning system up in the extreme north for here in North America. Mm-hmm. And for a while, that was important for them to be able to access that, service that. Also, the expeditions use these vehicles to get to and from laboratories that are either up or down there.
Mm-hmm. And when you say expeditions, of course, we're meaning not just tourist expeditions, but also expeditions for scientific purposes.
Exactly. Right? Mostly scientific. However, my first example is a tourism.
Yeah,
it's a tourism example. There is a company called, I think it's called, Great White Bear Tours. And Great White Bear Tours take you right out onto the tundra, allow you to view polar bears face-to-face from a vehicle. You're on a vehicle, kind of on a big deck, but you're way up high.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. This is, you guys, the dude showed me this one before. This is the one that I said was kind of redneck.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I guess. I don't know if I buy the redneck thing.
They have a grill on the back.
Okay, there's a grill on the back. Yeah, I understand.
That's something
that
my family would do.
Yeah, I know. You know what worried me about this the most? When I saw the photos of people leaning over on that deck, and there are several polar bears around this vehicle, and of course they're way up high. I don't know what the height of this thing is, but you know how big the polar bears are when they stand up.
Yeah, huge.
When these things stand up, you're face to face with them, and they can't reach up and touch you. I don't know if polar bears can jump once they're standing. I don't think so. But these people leaning in with their cameras and just getting close to the bears, very close to the bears.
Mm-hmm.
Something about it bugged me. You know, they're leaning a little too far over the edge, maybe. But I'm nervous on bridges and things like that, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think leaning over is sort of pushing your chances. But then again, when are you going to be there again?
Hey, I went to – way off topic. I went to Hoover Dam one time. And I was a bit nervous about just kind of peering over the edge. I don't know if you've ever been there or not, but it's, you know, it's really steep. It's half straight down, very steep, but a long way down.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit nervous about that anyways, but I did it, and it was fun. Someone comes walking past me with their kid on top of their shoulders, right next to the railing.
Yeah.
And it was a windy day. I still have kind of a nervous feeling about that one specific day and that one specific moment just thinking about that. So there's something about leaning over an edge on a cruise ship or something. I'll just stay away from the rail.
But you're not crazy about it. You know, it's not as if I left a photograph of the Hoover Dam on your desk, you wouldn't get freaked out?
No, nothing like that. Nothing. Okay. It's the actual act of leaning over the side. But
okay.
I do think
Plan
about
B.
I just think about that guy with his kid on his shoulders. And I mean, so here's somebody that's 8 feet up in the air, kind of balanced in the middle there on a windy day at the top of Hoover Dam. Not a good idea.
Oh, yeah, I guess it is pretty windy up there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, that's way off topic.
So that's now we know why you wouldn't be on that vehicle.
Yeah, why wouldn't lean over? I'd like to be on the vehicle.
You'd hang out.
Yeah, sure.
By the grill.
Sure.
Okay, what's
and,
next?
Well, these things have got to be – one thing that I wanted to mention looking up this information was that they wanted to point out that these machines run double shifts all day long. They run in snow, ice, of course, sleet, whatever conditions out there, extreme cold. Temperatures are, you know, below 20 degrees below freezing, of course. And there's no service out there. You know, they can't get anybody to come out.
Oh, yeah, if you break down, you can't call AAA.
Well, they said there's as many as 20 polar bears around them at one time.
Wow.
So you can't call a service person or a tow truck to come out and get you in the middle of the tundra with 20 polar bears around your vehicle.
They're going to have to bring a polar bear expert.
Yeah, exactly. So these things have to be extremely reliable, and they've got, you know, this they got this pretty well figured out now. They've got a big fleet of vehicles.
See, and I think this is a pretty good segue into one of the prime differences. Now, when I say this, Scott, please don't think that I am implying that non-extreme vehicles are somehow cheaply made. but there's definitely a lot of attention paid to these vehicles that could break down in the middle of nowhere and not be found.
Yeah, there's an endurance factor that they have to have.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way around it. You can't have a busload of people surrounded by 20 polar bears or whatever it would be, even if it's one polar bear. You don't want to get out of that vehicle to try to service the vehicle yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to call anybody to come and get you. You can't really. No one's going to do it. Outside of calling another vehicle of similar size and
right.
shape to come out and get you and transport people over without ever touching the ground, it becomes a real, real difficult situation. So, yeah, they have to pay attention to this durability factor.
Where do you want to go next with this?
I would love to go to remember when we mentioned we're going to talk about the snow cruiser?
Please.
Why don't you describe the snow cruiser?
Oh,
because
man.
It's a cool vehicle.
Okay. All right. I'll do it. And I hope I can do decent service to
okay.
it.
And then I've got a little story that goes along with it.
Okay. So the snow cruiser is kind of like a classic car when it comes to the polar vehicles because the first ones we're talking about 1940s, 1939. And it has two six-cylinder engines, 300 horsepower. The photograph that Scott and I have on here, it has a plane on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw this, I was trying to figure out if the plane actually detached and could fly, or if this was some weird idea, because it is a biplane, it was some weird idea to power it with a propeller, the same way that the CIV is powered.
I see.
But no, apparently, that plane is made to leave, and I think this is part of an expedition.
It's got skis in the bottom. It's a biplane with skis in the bottom of the
okay.
plane, so it can land on ice or snow or whatever, mm-hmm. I guess it would be ice or snow. I was thinking water, but no.
Probably kind of heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Ponchos. So is it story time?
It is. And this is what drew my attention because I was looking at, looking for photos of this thing because it's such a cool looking vehicle. The photo that we have is bright red with a red plane on the top. Looks really cool. White wheels, really neat. I found a photo of this thing stuck in a ditch in Indiana.
In Indiana?
Yeah, or wait. Let's get to it. I'll get to it.
Okay, okay.
I thought, what the heck is this thing doing stuck in a ditch? It's supposed to be this all-terrain, beat-all vehicle.
Right.
The article is titled The Antarctic Edsel, if that gives me any indication. So apparently this snow cruiser was a somewhat of a flop, according to this author. And he's got first-hand experience. He wrote, it says that... This is by Bob Haynes, special to the Sun. In the fall of 1939, I was only 12 years old, but I remember the event of all events that took place near my home in Lima, Ohio. There you go.
Ohio.
Lima or Lima? Lima. One of the greatest explorers of all time, Admiral Richard Byrd, was leaving for Antarctica, and he needed this snow cruiser vehicle. It was designed specifically for this expedition, this Richard Byrd's expedition. It had to drive, though, from Chicago, where it was built, to Boston, where the ship was waiting for it to leave. So it was, publicized that this thing would be driving across the country and it was going to make stops along the way.
So come check it out.
Yeah, it was called the Coming Spectacular. Life magazine carried details and drawings and, it was kind of, propagating this idea that this is the greatest unstoppable vehicle. And even newsreels at local theaters are publicizing what's going on. So I'm just paraphrasing this article, by the way. It carried a crew of seven men, measured 55 feet long, 20 feet wide, and 12 feet high.
So you're 20 feet wide.
20 feet wide and 12 feet high. So you get an idea of the size of these vehicles, right?
Yeah.
And at this time, it didn't have the plane on top. That was just the idea is that they're going to put the plane on top of it when it gets there.
Ah, okay.
Had twin 150 horsepower engines, and it weighed 37 tons. And each of the wheels was 10 feet tall, and each of the wheels weighed 700 pounds and was perfectly smooth, no tread.
No tread?
No tread.
That's counterintuitive.
Well,
okay.
You'll find that's important later.
All right.
So it was designed to cross crevasses up to 15 feet wide, like we mentioned. And the way it did it was it slid its front wheels forward, crosses the gap, and then retract its back wheels. And it could carry a ski-equipped biplane on top. Supposed to be the last word in it. It was a fantastic dream. It cost $150,000 in 1939 to build this thing.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but the cruiser's trip from Chicago to Boston was plagued with problems. And here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah. In Columbia City, Indiana, a truck sideswiped it on the road as it was being transferred.
So. Well, for Pete's sake, man, it's 20 feet wide.
I guess so. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, a fuel pump developed trouble. And then within 6 miles of our town, which was Lima, Ohio, the cruiser struck the corner of a bridge and plunged 8 feet into a small creek. And it was stuck in the creek for 3 days. They couldn't get out of this creek bed for 3 days because it wasn't designed for that type of environment. I guess it had to, it's in whatever position it was in, it was unable to get out. And I've got a photo of it here where it's
it was crooked
in this creek.
It had to be on its side or something.
No, it's just crooked in this creek, and I'll let you see
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not impressive.
It doesn't look it, does it?
No.
But there's a crowd gathered around it while it's stuck here, and this is the unstoppable Arctic vehicle
that
everybody came out to see.
That's publicity.
So it says, while it was stuck, 125,000 people went to view the unstoppable machine while it was stuck in the creek bed.
Not much going on in Ohio at
that
time, huh?
Well, that's, I mean, it was, again, Life Magazine is talking about this thing.
Yeah, you're right.
So it was really, really pushed, really hyped. The trip took a total of 19 days. And, let's see, it was quickly discovered that, when they finally got it to Antarctica, okay? They discovered that the vehicle's smooth tires had very little traction in the snow. We had guessed that. You guessed that already. So it only took a very small amount of snow to make it to make the unstoppable stopped or halted. Later they mounted extra wheels to the axles to give it extra traction. Someone discovered the vehicle actually operated better in reverse. So
ridiculous.
Time that this thing was used, it was driven in reverse. 92 miles was the total lifespan of this thing. 92 miles. And all driven in reverse because they figured out that at reverse it worked better for whatever reason. Weight distribution, whatever it was.
150 miles.
No, 92.
Oh, $150,000, 92 miles.
92 miles, all backwards.
All backwards.
So then, now this is, remember, this is the time frame.
Yeah.
This is 1940, 1939. The expedition went up to 1941. The war hit then, you know, a little bit after that. And Congress, you know, decided that funding wasn't important for this thing anymore, so they parked it. And it was parked in an underground ice garage. And this is where we get into kind of a little mystery here, which is interesting. In the late 1940s, another expedition found the vehicle, decided that it only needed air in the tires, a little bit of work on the engine. It was operable, so they used it for a while. It was then parked again, and then it wasn't rediscovered again until 1962, and it was perfectly preserved.
Weird.
Yeah, so this thing went away for long periods of time. And then, you know, other expeditions come across this thing in an ice garage.
So is it really that bad, that much of an Edsel? Because if it's preserved.
Well, I guess. I mean, that's just a matter of the conditions surrounding it. Of course, it's still living.
Oh, sure, sure.
Get this. This is kind of cool. As of 1985, there was speculation as to the whereabouts of this vehicle. So it's lost again.
I love speculation.
I do too. This is pretty cool because the Antarctic ice is in constant motion, it says. And in the mid-1960s, a large chunk of the Ross ice shelf broke off and drifted away. And that is the break that happened right through the expedition's headquarters, right where the original expedition's headquarters were.
Oh.
Right in the middle of it. And they don't know which side of the break this thing was on. If it was on the side that floated out to sea and is now this thing is at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Or if it's still safe and in some kind of an ice garage up there. But I guess they're going to have to dig it out and find out.
There's only one way to find out.
Yeah, just have to head up there and look for it.
Before we close out, the quick thing people probably want to know about polar vehicles, you know how sometimes it can be so cold in parts of the world that your engine just won't start.
Yeah.
So how do you start these vehicles?
Engine block heaters.
Okay.
You need to keep the fluids fluid because at that type of temperature they get very viscous. Very thick.
Yeah, like molasses.
And, like molasses. Very, very heavy. So the oil becomes so thick that the crank won't even turn inside the crankcase.
Which is why you have electric block heaters.
A lot of these vehicles you'll notice have the motors power the engines power electric motors that then drive the wheels. So a lot of these are electric, they're hybrid.
They're
vehicles,
hybrids.
Really. Yeah, from a long, long time ago. And I won't go into detail on this one, but
sure.
Definitely look up the Letourneau Electric Arctic Land Train.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool military vehicle. It's like 600 feet long. Again, another electric powered vehicle. It had 54-wheel drive. The latest version of it did. So check that out. It's called the Electric Latourno Electric Land Train.
And, you know, you can check that out. I'm trying to figure out where my new favorite Edsel is. Because if you find it, doesn't it fall under salvage law at this point?
I don't know.
That's a whole different podcast.
I don't know if it's, you know, it could be military owned. I don't know.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're right.
I just don't know.
I'd love to find it.
Now, they said another expedition used it until the 60s, I believe.
So here we go, guys. We're closing with a mystery. We have a missing polar vehicle. And the little bit of advice we could leave off on is, if you and your friends decide to take a road trip, first off, try not to drive your own car.
That's good advice.
That's always a comment.
Hey, maybe it'll work in reverse.
Maybe it'll work in reverse.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's all we need. That's all we need to do with Monte Carlos and Civics. But otherwise, do keep in mind that you can have some awesome adventures up there, and it is, I think, as Scott said earlier, one of the ultimate off-roading adventures.
Yeah, so it is possible. You could drive to the North Pole, but it's an extreme trip.
All right, so as always, thanks for tuning in. We will see you next time, but in the meantime, if you have any ideas for another topic, please send us an email at
highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage.